From NPR, it's Latino USA. The border debate becomes a legal skirmish, with the Justice Department now suing to stop a tough immigration law in Arizona.
They're drawing a line in the sand saying, if you're for tough immigration, you have to support this. When from our perspective, it is undeniably unconstitutional, it's unfunded, it's unworkable.
Washington is broken, Mr. President. Do your job. Secure our borders. Arizona and the nation are waiting.
Fama, mala fama, la que me va persiguiendo. Fama.
On today's program, judging Arizona's SB 1070. The federal government says the law is unconstitutional, but many in the state and around the country say stronger enforcement is needed. All that and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. For the news, we turn now to Puerto Rico. Last week, clashes erupted at the Puerto Rican Capitol building when police violently prevented protesters from attending a legislative session. Authorities had closed access to the general public after groups, including university students, announced plans for a protest against the massive budget cuts and other policies of Governor Luis Fortuño. Students at the University of Puerto Rico recently voted to end their two-month-long strike against budget cuts, fee hikes, and school privatization. This after receiving some concessions from the government. For more on this story, we're joined now by Omaya Sosa Pascual, co-director of the Centro de Periodismo Investigativo, an independent nonprofit center for investigative reporting based in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Omaya, welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you, Maria.
Omaya, Puerto Rico is in the middle of a pretty substantial budget crisis, and it's suffering also from a recession that in many ways is worse than what's being felt in the United States on the mainland. Governor Luis Fortuño has been pushing cuts for some time, and they have been unpopular, but only the university students have raised any significant protest. With this violence at the Capitol, are we seeing a more vehement rise of discontent against the government?
Well, I think so. I think people are angry. Basically, if you've seen the images, there are pretty strong images of students that are basically doing a peaceful protest, and they were removed by violence and force. There were girls and women that were hit by the riot police, and the people that were already angry with the government policies of budget cuts and job cuts, because there have been about 20,000 job cuts in government for the last year, and there are more to come. Basically, people, you know, are getting very angry with the situation and very concerned.
I think it's important to remind our listeners that all of these people who are being assaulted in this confrontation with police, they're all American citizens, and the police are American citizens. And it's kind of surprising that you're not seeing this kind of violence between students and police on a massive scale in the United States. But they're not images that have been seen widely in the United States. What was the reaction in Puerto Rico when these images hit the media?
Yeah, well, here they were widely seen, and it's been the topic of public conversation and discussion for a week and a half now. And actually, part of what has been criticized is precisely that what you're saying, that stateside media has really overlooked what's going on here. I mean, something like this happens in Connecticut or somewhere else in New York, and it would have been all over the place. But why is it happening here and not there? Well, basically, the economic crisis here is much worse than in the States. We're hitting almost 17% unemployment rate, and government policies are not helping. There's no new ideas coming along. So basically, people are concerned here.
Omaya, what do you think happens next? I mean, this is a big puzzle that's unfolding.
Well, basically, I told you the governor didn't speak out until only 24 hours later. And his initial position was defending the police until he saw over and over the images. And, you know, it was obvious he had to say something because the images speak for themselves. So now he opened up an investigation of police brutality. And other sectors of society, like labor unions and, you know, general citizens are starting to organize and to see what other ways they can protest. So what's going to happen next? There are some protests announced for the next weeks. I don't know if you're conscious, but we're having the Central American and Caribbean Games hosted here in Puerto Rico. starting next week, actually. So we're going to have a lot of international press from Central America and the Caribbean region. And I am sure that's going to be a moment where some of these groups will voice out their concerns. Another thing that is happening is that civil society is moving. It seems like they don't trust the government anymore. And basically, even though Governor Fortuna announced he will be investigating some of this police brutality, the Lawyers Association in Puerto Rico is opening up their own investigation, and they say they will start to occupy the void that the government is leaving in terms of listening to the people. So we have to see what comes out from there.
Gracias, Omaya.
Thank you.
Omaya Sosa Pascual is the co-director of the Centro de Periodismo Investigativo, an independent nonprofit center for investigative reporting in San Juan. Remember, you can stay connected to news from Latino USA online at latinousa.org. Or you can follow us on Twitter. We are Latino USA, all one word. We're back in 30 seconds. Don't go away. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. People have been watching Arizona and the controversial immigration law there for months now. Politicians in other states are looking to copy the legislation, while police chiefs around the country have warned that the mandate to ask about immigration status will drain vital resources. In Arizona, the reaction is personal. Some have left the state in fear, while other residents feel the law will make them safer. And now that the U.S. Department of Justice has sued Arizona on this matter, a judge will weigh in on this debate. We're joined now by Lidia Camarillo, the vice president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project. Welcome back to Latino USA, Lidia.
Gracias. Un placer.
Lidia, your group has worked hard to defeat this law in Arizona. So with this federal lawsuit, what does this do to the debate in Arizona?
Well, I think the community has been waiting for a while for the Justice Department to file the lawsuit, so we're all very pleased. It's I think a good first step of many challenges. As you know, MALDEF, ACLU, and other organizations have filed a lawsuit, as well as individuals who are police officers who clearly think that this law will create a conflict, a personal conflict for them to do their work. And now having the Justice Department stand forth and say that this law is trying to supersede any federal law, which, as you know, is not something that's supposed to be happening.
So there are many in Arizona and people who support what's happening in Arizona who say, look, the reality is that the federal government is failing. It's failing entirely on the issue of immigration. They have not been enforcing immigration laws. And most people just look outside in their communities and they can see this. So and many people kind of feel really unprotected. So what do you say to them, you know, who say, look, why is the federal government doing a lawsuit when in fact they should be beefing up what's happening in Arizona?
Well, I say to them the following thing. There's two sides to this debate. Those of us who want to see a response for a fair and just immigration reform law that passes immediately, and then those who feel that before a conversation on fair and just immigration will take place, must be about enforcing the borders. And I have to tell you that that down payment was provided already in 06 and continues to be the forefront of what the past administration and the current administration are doing. So I think we're done with that conversation. The next conversation is we want to make sure that we find a response to bringing out of the shadows the 12 million immigrant communities that are in need of finding a response and who are providing economic benefits to this country that we're not willing to have a real conversation about.
So let's hear what Governor Jan Brewer from Arizona had to say in response to the federal government's lawsuit announcement.
Washington is broken, Mr. President. Do your job. Secure our borders. Arizona and the nation are waiting.
Lidia, your response to what Governor Jan Brewer is saying?
The governor is herself running for office, And she is in a position where she feels she has to go to the extremes to make sure that the extreme right, the Republican right, comes out and supports her. Her election is coming up this November. And second, no matter what we say and we do, if we don't have a response that it's bilateral and multilateral, we're really never going to solve the problem that the governor is responding to. And last but not least, for the governor to suggest that it's not unconstitutional and profiling Latinos is to say that Latinos aren't going to vote and they're not going to be angry in turnout and vote against those that are voting against their interest. I think her and Senator McCain will be in trouble. Senator McCain has won because he's had the Latino vote that has voted for him. I don't see that happening, and it's very unpredictable right now because the Latino community is, frankly, mad.
And finally, Lidia, you have raised the issue of anger within the Latino community. And I just want you to kind of talk about that anger. Has something happened now? Is there some kind of a shift as we count down to July 29th when the Arizona law is poised to go into effect? What do we do with this anger? There might be people who hear talk about Latino anger and they're going to start saying, oh, God, well, that's the last thing we want to hear. But at the same time, there's also a lot of activism, a kind of freedom summer that's going to be happening, days of protest, civil disobedience. So what about this moment and Latinos and their anger?
Well, the anger stems from the fact that we understand that the Latino community, it's under attack and it's under siege. What's important about this is that it's not just the undocumented that are under attack. It's going to be men and women who are American citizens, men and women who have a constitutional right, because this country gave them that right by their very birth, to treat them with respect and not to violate their civil and human rights. And so we're about to see in America something that we all fought against through the history of this country. And so we're going to see Latinos standing up and fighting against what's wrong. We're going to see the African-American community, the Asian community, the Jewish community, and progressives standing with us, and we're very excited about that. But it's clear to us that when you see this kind of unconstitutional violation of our rights in Arizona, and it's allowed to become a law, then other states feel that they will do the same thing, and learning from Arizona to do exactly the same thing. And if we don't stand up against this, this country is no longer going to be a leader talking about civil rights and protecting civil rights around the world.
Lidia Camarillo, thank you so much for your thoughts.
Thank you.
Lidia Camarillo is the vice president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project based in San Antonio. The tough new Arizona law that makes illegal immigration a crime has sparked various lawsuits. And now the federal government has weighed in, arguing that the law is unconstitutional. They want a court injunction to stop the law from taking effect later on this month. The U.S. Department of Justice argues that the law interferes with federal authority over immigration. We called up reporter Evan Perez of the Wall Street Journal. He's following this story from Washington, D.C., and its legal and political repercussions. Welcome to Latino USA, Evan.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So in your article in the Wall Street Journal, you write that this basically sets up a likely Supreme Court case. So explain the constitutional issues that this might bring up. And do you think that the Supreme Court will hear it?
Yes, I think for many reasons, you know, especially the fact that conservatives who support this law want to see this go all the way to the Supreme Court. So even if, for example, they lose in the first round, or there's parts of the law that are ruled unconstitutional, there is a feeling that they want to go all the way up because they view that the current makeup of the Supreme Court, which is tilted a bit more conservative, this would be a more favorable time for such an appeal. The constitutional issue here, it goes back, obviously since the beginning of the United States, where states and the federal government have argued over where does state power end and where does federal power begin. Under the Constitution, whatever powers aren't assigned to the federal government are, relegated to the states. And so that's the system that the U.S. is set up under. And ever since the founding of the United States, the federal government and the states have been arguing over where that line lies.
You're based in Washington, D.C., and all of this is not happening in a vacuum. There are clearly some political concerns about, that are looked at here. How does this play for the Democrats in heavily Latino states if there's basically no movement on the part of the Democrats to resolve this issue?
Well, you know, this is an issue that makes both parties a little nervous. You know, there is some advantage to the Democrats to talk about this issue because there's a lot of Latino voters who've become very disaffected with the president who made all these promises to address this issue. And so the Democrats feel that there's a somewhat of an advantage for them. That said, there's also some dangers because there's a lot of middle-class white voters who, you know, historically have a better turnout in midterm elections, and, you know, they support this Arizona law more strongly. And so there's some definite dangers for the Democrats to use this. On the part of the Republicans, they're very nervous because they don't want to be viewed by this growing electorate, the Latino electorate, as being anti-Latino, and that is exactly how they're viewed because of the way they've treated this issue. The Arizona law is, you know, was basically brought forward by the Republicans in Arizona. So the politics of this is very much in play. It's very much the reason why this is being discussed right now.
And finally, Evan, you know, I find it interesting that still there are people who have questions about the nature of this law. As we understand the law now, taking effect on July 29th, what does it say about the reasons why a police officer can stop a person? Must they be in a stop already? In other words, you crossed a traffic light, you were close to where a robbery occurred, or can they stop anyone for any reason under this law?
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, there's very much a lot of disagreement over this issue. The language is pretty clear in the sense that it says that there must be some probable cause for the police officer to stop a person. But, you know, probable cause is still left to interpretation. There's still a lot of human decision-making that happens. And a lot of people don't trust that the particular officers in certain cases will be able to make those decisions without some kind of prejudice. And that is just, part of being human.
So, in fact, if there's probable cause, or there has to be probable cause, and the state is saying that if you're undocumented, it is a crime, then wouldn't it be that they just look at you and think, this guy, this woman looks like an undocumented immigrant, therefore that's probable cause that they're in the country doing something illegal, therefore I have the right to stop them?
Well, you know, first, again, there has to be some probable cause for them to stop you. For example, you know, a traffic stop or a suspected violation. Some people who read the law also see it possible, though, that, you know, for example, a neighbor could complain that your grass is too high or you have too many cars. You know, in some communities, you can't have too many cars parked in your driveway. And so that's a municipal violation of some kind. The police officers can come to your house and then upon looking at you can suspect that maybe you're illegal and then start asking you questions. So there's a little bit of, you know, nobody knows exactly how in practice this is going to be put out. And that's one reason why there's so much nervousness. And you know, on the part of the people who passed the law, too, they don't know necessarily how it will be put in practice because, again, you're leaving it up. There's a lot of discretion for the police officers.
All right, Evan Perez, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you for having me.
Evan Perez is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal based in Washington, D.C. In a minute, historias from StoryCorps. That's coming up on Latino USA. No se vayan. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Time now to check in with StoryCorps Historias. Each month, we hear from this project that's recording Latino stories throughout the country and archiving them at the Library of Congress. Today, two stories from Los Angeles. One looks at the California of the past, the other to the California of the future. Sylvia Mendez and her younger sister Sandra tell this first story. 65 years ago, their family joined four others in a lawsuit against Orange County, California, because their Mexican-American children were not allowed to attend white-only schools. The case, Mendez versus Westminster, helped set the stage for Brown versus Board of Education. Sandra Mendez was born after the case was won and never heard about it growing up. But Sylvia was 8 years old when her parents went to court. Here, she tells her sister about the trial.
I remember being in court every day. They would dress us up really nice, and we'd be there sitting very quietly, not really understanding what was going on. And it wasn't until I was 10 years old that I really discovered what they were fighting. And I remember this so vividly. I go to school, and the school bell rings, and we go out to play, and this little white boy comes up, and he says, "What are you doing here? You don't belong in the school. They shouldn't have Mexicans here." And I started crying because I've always been that way. So I go home, I tell my mother, "I don't want to be in that school." And she says, "Don't you realize that this is what we fought for? Of course you're going to stay in that school and prove that you're just as good as he is." When did you first learn of the suit?
I was in college, and I happened to be assigned a book called North from Mexico. Studying, I just opened the book, and I saw Mendez. And when I read my dad's name, Gonzalo Mendez, I knew it couldn't be a coincidence. And then I start reading the story, and I'm awed by it. And I called my mother, and I said, "I'm reading this book, and it's talking about this case, and it's got Sylvia's name in it." And Mom said, "Oh, yeah, that was us. We did that." When I asked, "Why didn't you tell me?" She said that nobody wanted to hear about it. People would accuse them of bragging. So they decided not to talk about it. And I took the book to the professor, and I said, "This is my mom and dad." And I so wanted him to be excited. And he looked at me and said, "Oh, really?" That was it. Here he was, a Chicano studies professor, and he didn't care about it. But to me, it was something amazing. Here I was, a piece of history, and just discovering this story. It was like discovering gold.
Sandra Mendez Duran with Sylvia Mendez at StoryCorps in Walnut, California. Now a story born in an East L.A. boxing gym. It comes from 17-year-old Cenisa Estrada and her father, Joe. Cenisa is an amateur boxing champion about to turn pro. Her father, Joe, is a former gang member who gave up that life to become Cenisa's coach. Here, they talk about how she got her start in the ring when she was just 8 years old.
I was watching a boxing fight one day with you and my brother. I mean, I don't know too many 8-year-old girls who would look at a boxing fight and think it's fun, but for some reason I did.
She says, "Hey, Dad, do girls box?" And I'm like, "Oh, yes." A few minutes later, she says, "Can I box?" And I'm like, "Sure, baby, you can box. All right, well, will you take me to the gym?" I says, "Yeah." And a month went by.
Maybe even like 2 months went by.
And she just brings it up again. "Hey, Dad, can you take me to the gym? You told me you were going to take me to the gym." I remember you keep telling me over and over. Huh?
I didn't know how hard it was either. I just thought I was going to go to a gym and get in the ring and fight, because that's what I wanted to do.
She went into the ring with this little boy and got hit in the stomach really hard. She looked at the little kid like, "I'm going to get you." And she just went right at him.
I was just swinging.
No technique in her punches.
No technique, I was just swinging.
She just wailed away, and it was like, wow. I just saw that, and it was like the coach said, "Stop, stop." They stopped the fight. The little boy was crying, and that's the moment where I said, "My little girl's a fighter. She was meant to do this."
How does it feel when you see me in the ring?
Well, it hasn't changed from the first time I saw you in the ring. It's kind of hard. The first time I watched you get hit, I really wanted to jump into that ring. You'll see me moving and trying to slip every punch that's being thrown at you. I'm actually moving around, so it's like if they're hitting me. How is it for you? What do you feel like when you're in the ring?
It's a feeling that's like hard to describe. Before I'm fighting, I feel so many different emotions. It's crazy. But once I'm in the ring, I really don't feel anything. I mean, because I'm so comfortable in there. It's what I'm meant to do, and I want to keep fighting.
Oh, cool. That's good.
What I admire about you is how you changed over the years and just the person you become.
I'm not who I used to be, you know?
Yeah, he's came a long way from being into gangs and stuff. All of a sudden, me wanting to box, it just all changed.
I completely stopped doing all the drugs and everything that I used to do before, because at that split second when you made that decision, it's over. I mean, I'm going to stand right behind her and be a good father to her. And I love you with all my heart, baby, and I'm proud of you now, and I'll always be.
love you.
Too. 17-year-old amateur boxing champion Sanisa Estrada with her dad and coach Joe Estrada in Montebello, California. StoryCorps Historias is now recording interviews in New York, La Crosse, Wisconsin, Fort Wayne, Indiana, San Francisco, and Atlanta. To find out how you can record your own interview, go to latinousa.org and click on StoryCorps. And finally this week, be sure to tune in to Need to Know on PBS. This week, I'll be doing a profile of a judge that has set up a special court for veterans based in Houston, Texas. 2 years ago, Marty Gonzalez got in trouble with the law. He was driving home when he passed out and crashed his truck into a house. And he wasn't alone. His 3-year-old son was in the back seat.
You were doing some pretty bad stuff.
I don't condone what I did at all. I regret ever driving with my son in the car, or driving, period.
Gonzalez had taken pain pills, twice the prescribed amount. And though no one was injured in the crash, he was arrested and charged with driving while intoxicated with a child passenger. That's a felony in Texas, and it carries up to a 2-year prison sentence. But that's not what the judge gave Marty Gonzalez. Instead, he got 2 years probation, no prison time, and a chance to have his record wiped clean. Judge Mark Carter decided to give him a second chance because Marty Gonzalez is a veteran, a decorated Marine who served in Iraq.
He has no criminal history. The only thing that he'd ever done in his life up to that point was serve his country honorably.
For more information on Need to Know, go to our website at latinousa.org. And for this week, that's Latino USA. The program comes to you from the Futuro Media Group, online at futuromediagroup.org, and is produced in cooperation with KUT Austin. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And from LendingTree, whose financial tools include Loan Coach, offering personalized advice for every step of the lending process at lendingtree.com. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. This is NPR.